It is indeed Tuesday, and these are our lifestyle classes. They differ from the Sunday classes, and as much as the Sunday classes are kind of for newer people that walk through the door, to give them a basic orientation of Krishna consciousness, give them some relevant points that they can incorporate into their lives and make use of on Monday morning. These are classes for devotees, and they deal with nuts and bolts of Krishna consciousness, things like prasadam, the guru, the role of the guru. This is a series. This will be the third in what might be, maybe four or five series of shows about the names of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. There are 28 different names by which Arjuna addresses Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. And there are repetitions also. He calls him Achyuta a number of times, Purushottam a number of times. But there are 28 different names altogether by which Arjuna calls Krishna. And we've talked about the first nine, which all appeared in chapters 1 and 2. This is the 10th different name that Arjuna calls Krishna, and this appears in the second chapter, fourth verse. The name is Ari Sudana. And the verse is, Arjuna said, O Madhusudana, Ari Sudana, how can I counterattack with arrows in battle men like Bhishma and Drona who are worthy of my worship? Ari Sudana means killer of enemies. And so Krishna, or Arjuna, addresses Krishna by two different names. One is Madhusudana, or the killer of the demon of doubt, and Ari Sudana, which means basically in general the killer of enemies. So Krishna is the killer of enemies. And the reason that Arjuna uses these two words is very interesting, because he's saying, our Duryodhana and Bhishma really are enemies. They are our mentors, they're our uncles, our grandfather. They taught us. They brought us up. They gave us our value system. So Madhusudana, Arisudana, you're very good at killing your enemies. But are these our enemies? Are these really the type of people that we're in the business of killing? Not only do I feel that I should not be throwing arrows at them, but I should be offering flowers. On the appearance day of the spiritual master, we have Pushpanjali, and the devotees offer flowers to the teacher, to the guru. So Arjuna, he's accustomed to shooting arrows at his enemies, the bad guys. But to those who are his teachers and his gurus and who have good moral system, like Dronacharya and Bhishma, you do the Pushpanjali. And so Arjuna is saying, shouldn't we be throwing flowers instead of arrows, at least at these two personalities? Madhu was a king in the Yadu dynasty, the same dynasty in which Krishna appeared. And so Arjuna is using this word very, very specifically, because Krishna is the killer of enemies, and the Yadus are not his enemies. They're his family members. Krishna wouldn't kill the Yadus, and so why is Krishna asking Arjuna then to kill the Kauravas? Krishna wouldn't kill his cousins, or at least we don't have an instance of it. And so then why does Arjuna have to do something more than what Krishna has ever done, which is to kill his teachers and his relatives? So, and then the next verse, also in the second chapter, in which Arjuna calls Krishna by a name, and he's used this name before, so I don't have a number beside it. Janardana, and the verse here is, actually this is in the third chapter. Arjuna said, O Janardana, O Keshava, why do you want to engage me in this ghastly warfare if you think that intelligence is better than fruitive work? Janardana means one who destroys hindrances on the devotional path. So Arjuna's question is, what does the pursuit of knowledge? You know, as Krishna is stressing intelligence and deliberation and introspection, analysis. And at the same time, he's asking Arjuna to throw himself into this mayhem, which is going to be the Kurukshetra war. And so his question is, what does the one have to do with the other? How can you talk about the one and then promote the other at the same time, in the same conversation? What does the pursuit of knowledge and the restraint of the senses have to do with this ghastly warfare? Arjuna is confused, and he's saying to Krishna that your instructions are equivocal. Now we come into chapter 4, And we find the 11th different name by which Arjuna calls Krishna. This is in the 6th verse. He calls him Ishvara. The verse is, although I am unborn, Ajo Pishanavyatma Bhutanam Prakriti Sham Adishtaya Sambhavamyatma Maya. And my transcendental body never deteriorates, and although I am the Lord of all living entities, still I appear in every millennium in my original transcendental form. So why does he use the word Ishvara here? So Krishna answers the question, because earlier in this chapter, Krishna has said that he spoke to the sun god, Bibhishan, many, 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 many millennium ago in the very, very beginning of creation. And Arjuna wants him to clarify this. In other words, he says, well, how could you have spoken to the sun god? Because I was born just the other day, and you were born along with me, maybe a couple years older than me, my cousin brother. So how is it that in as much as we're contemporaries, and we took birth in approximately the same time, that you spoke to the sun god, Vivashram. And Krishna says, Ishvara, Ishvaraham sambhavami yuge yuge. That I appear in every millennium in order, whenever there's a decline, a discrepancy in the process of religiosity and a decline in irreligion, I appear age after age. And later on, he's going to tell Arjuna that I remember all of those appearances and you do not. Because Krishna is unlimited and Arjuna is limited. Krishna is immortal. And Arjuna is a companion of Krishna, but he accompanies Krishna from birth to birth as a jiva soul, as a mortal soul. So Krishna is answering the question of how it is that he could have spoken to the sun god as he and Arjuna are the same age. He is Ishvara. He is the Lord. Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchinananda Vigraha Anadira Dhir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. And then in the 7th chapter, jumping forward here, from the 4th to the 7th chapter, the 12th different name by which Arjuna calls Krishna is Vasudeva. And this is the verse. After many, many births and deaths, he was actually acknowledged, surrenders unto me, such a, knowing me to be the cause of all causes and all that is, such a great soul is very rare. Bahunam jamanam ate gyanabam mambam. Vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurabaha. Vasudeva means he's the son of Vasudeva. He was born as a son of Vasudeva and Devaki in the prison house of Kamsa. So it means that he's a person. By calling him Vasudeva, Arjuna is indicating that Krishna is a person. He's not a force. He's not an effulgent. The goal of life is not to become one with him, but to remain as a separate entity and to enjoy reciprocal loving service between the servant and the Lord. The Lord has a father. He has a mother. He has a brother, Balaram. He has all kinds of relationships. Even that Jatila, that old lady in the nectar devotion, Krishna's joking at her that she has a belly like a big drum. Yeah. All kinds of different relationships. To Jarasandhi, he said, I am the black snake who's going to come and eat you. Now, every different relationship is there with the Lord. So those who think of the Lord as only effulgence, they are not drawn to him with the same attraction as those who have a personal relationship with him. So this verse, after many, many births and deaths, those who are actually in knowledge, that means those who graduate from the impersonal conception of the Lord and then from the Paramatma, the super soul conception of the Lord, to the Bhagavan conception of the Lord, are those who are really, really intensely eager to reestablish their lost relationship with the Lord. The Goswamis wandered from kund to kund in Vrindavan, from forest to forest. Hey Rad, hey Bhajadevike, hey Nanda, Suno, Kutaha. Kuta means, where are you? Where are you? Where is the son of Nanda Maharaj? They were beside themselves with eager anticipation, seeing Krishna once again. You don't chase an effulgence like that. You don't have that same attraction to become one with the Lord or to become God. That bahunam jamnanam monte, gyanavam ram prabhadyate, those who are knowledge, that actually refers to those who have realized the Bhagavan or the personal feature of the Lord. Now in the 8th chapter, the 13th different name by which Arjuna called Krishna is Purushottama. The verse is the first verse of the 8th chapter. O Purushottama, Supreme Person, what is Brahman, what is the Self, and what are fruitive activities? You know, many commentators on the Bhagavad Gita take the Bhagavad Gita as a mundane book of knowledge. spoken by a mundane personality. And so they see it as in a relative sense, that the Bhagavad Gita is relatively better than this book or relatively better than that book. But here Krishna is referred to as Purusharam, above ignorance. Tama means ignorance and Purusha means above ignorance. So Arjuna is indicating by the way that he addresses Krishna that the knowledge, the answers to the questions that he's posing are not mundane and are not to be taken relatively. That because Krishna is absolute, he's beyond the darkness of matter. And he sees everything prakash, he sees everything clearly. Whatever the answers that Arjuna is going to get to these questions are absolute. They're absolute. And the Bhagavad Gita should be taken as being spoken by that personality who is infallible, who is beyond the defects. Here it is further clarified. Arjuna is putting questions not just to a friend, nor is the Gita spoken by an ordinary or even extraordinary man. Arjuna is saying, basically in effect, O Lord, everything is known to you, whereas my knowledge is limited. Chapter 9. Two more words, 13 and 14th, are both found in this fifth verse of chapter 9. Bhuta Bhavana and Bhuta Brit. And the verse is, although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. And this is a personal quote. This is not Arjuna addressing Krishna, but this is Krishna describing himself. So Bhuta Bhavana means all living beings are in him, they come from him, they're all about him. Bhuta means the living beings, and Bhavana means it's a state of existence or state of being. So all living beings have their existence in Krishna. And Bhuta Brit means who maintains all living beings. We know this verse, Nitya Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitanam Eko Yo Vaidadati Kama. The one supplies the many with all their various necessities of life. That's Bhuta Brit. He's maintaining everyone. He's in the world. He creates the world. The Lord creates the world, but then he doesn't just leave it on its own. He doesn't just turn his back on it or walk away. Some people say that God is like a watchmaker. He makes the watch, he winds it up, and then he lets it run, and then he has nothing further to do with it. And then other people say that God is everywhere. God is the universe. God is love. And he has no separate existence. He's basically, and they talk about universal consciousness or cosmic consciousness. But only the philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Achinta Beda, Abheda Tattva, that the Lord is simultaneously one with the universe and simultaneously, inconceivably, separate from the universe as well. He does create it like a watchmaker. He knows all the details because he fashioned all those details, at least in the form of Shankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. And then he also enters into the world. He pervades and supports everything in this world in his Brahman feature and also in his Paramatma feature. So nothing exists, nothing is supported, nothing is sustained except that the Lord has entered into it. Just like a cloud, you can't see the air, but the reason that the cloud is floating is because the air is supporting it. The unseen air is supporting it. So Krishna is unseen, he's supporting everything. Huge planets weighing zillions of tons are floating like wisps of cotton in the air because the Lord has entered into that with his power, his strength, his ojasaha. At the same time, having created the world and being non-different from the world, he is also separate. He has his own individuality, has his own planet, he has his own separate identity. Crude example is the architect, which actually is Vaibhavi for all practical purposes. You could say that, you know, this temple, when people see this temple, they think of Vaibhavi. I do. Because she paid attention to every single detail. She worked it out, she figured it out, and she engaged the contractors in putting it together. And so we think of Vaibhavi being everywhere present in the wiring, the plumbing, the design, the domes, and everything. At the same time, she's not a building. She's much more than a building. She built the building. She's non-different from the building. But all of us who know Vaibhavi know that she's built the building. Then she did something else. She did something else. And aside from all the things that she did, she's a separate individual person. So God created the world. He maintains the world in His expansive features. But He also has His own abode and His own personality. That's why you can't imagine or make up things about God. You can't make up something. You have to get the information from the Lord Himself, what pleases Him. And that way you can serve Him favorably. 15th. Now this again is Krishna speaking. So these are not all names by which Arjuna addresses Krishna, but they're different names referring to the Lord throughout the Bhagavad Gita. In most cases, Arjuna is using them to refer to the Lord. In some cases, Krishna is describing Himself, which is what we want. We want to please God, so if He's talking about Himself, fixing various monikers to Himself, then that's very helpful to us who want to serve Him favorably. So in the 18th verse in the 9th chapter, Krishna says, I am the goal, I am the sustainer, I am the master, the witness, the abode, and the refuge. And that word is Prabhu. Prabhu. The explanation, the Lord performs all tasks, that should be plural, with ease. He can play any of the mentioned roles perfectly. His capability and versatility are stressed by this name. Prabhu means master. He's expert. He's expert. I mean, we know Krishna is playing the flute, and we know he's expert at playing the flute, but he's also expert at playing the tuba. You know, he can play the cello if he wants. Anyone who plays the tuba well got that ability from Krishna. Anyone who plays the cello well got that ability from Krishna. We have Lorraine Horstmanshaw from Salt Lake City. She leads kirtans up there, and she comes and joins us sometimes, and she plays the didgeridoo, you know, which is really a cool instrument. It's like about, I don't know, 12 feet long. Boom, 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 boom. So Krishna plays the didgeridoo, you know. And he speaks Sanskrit. He speaks Sanskrit, but he also speaks Hebrew. He speaks German. He speaks French, you know. Speaks Scandinavian. Speaks the language of the New Guinea headhunters. He's a master. Whatever art or craft or skill that you want to identify, Krishna is the absolute, complete master at that. And when he plays at the role of son of Mother Yashoda, nobody in the history of the world ever engaged or engrossed their mother more in their childhood pastimes than Krishna. Nikunja's, you know, she's the center of attention wherever she goes. She's just as cute as a button, you know. She's our little chipmunk. And she's very good at being a little attractive child, you know. But not as good as Krishna. Because actually, whatever attractiveness she has, that's gleaned from Krishna Himself. And so all the yogis and the great saints, they envied Mother Yashoda because none of them got as full and deep a meditation on Krishna as Mother Yashoda did. We say, ahaitukiya pratiyata. We know that we've reached the level of pure devotional service when our love is ahaitukiya pratiyata, when it is unmotivated and uninterrupted. And yogis can't achieve that. Meditators can't achieve that. Ascetics can't achieve that. Philosophers can't achieve that. Great philanthropists can't achieve that. But Mother Yashoda achieved that. And Nanda Maharaj achieved that. Ahaituki apratiyata. That's exactly what we want. Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj have what we want. Actually, we don't worship Krishna. Rupa Goswami says, we don't worship Krishna. We worship the devotees of Krishna. And our goal is not to get Krishna. Not to get Krishna. Because you can't get Krishna. How are we going to get Krishna? We can't even get Michael Jackson, you know, what to speak Krishna, you know. But what we can do is we can get love of Krishna. So our goal is not Krishna, our goal is Krishna praying. So who has Krishna praying? Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj. And Krishna has Krishna praying in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he's our preceptor. He's our role model and, of course, Prabhupada. But many great devotees have said, you know, I don't want to become one with Krishna, you know. I just want to do some service to Mother Yashoda upon whose breast Krishna is sucking. See, that is my lord and mistress. That personality who is so uninterruptedly and unmotivated and so selflessly engaged in serving Krishna, they've given themselves so completely to Krishna that Krishna is sitting on her lap, sitting trustingly in the lap of Mother Yashoda, contentedly sucking in the breast milk. You can almost hear Krishna like purring, you know, and making those little sounds of baby contentment as he does that. And it's because Mother Yashoda has given herself completely to Krishna, and Krishna is giving himself completely to Mother Yashoda. And another devotee says, I don't want to become one with Krishna. I want to worship Nanda Maharaj, whose shoes Krishna puts on his head. You know? Nanda Maharaj says, Krishna, can you bring me my shoes? And he puts the shoes on his head, and he's just learned how to walk, and he's just kind of making his way very awkwardly across the floor to give the shoes to Nanda Maharaj. So he's a master, and when he plays the role of the son, no one can surpass him. No one can surpass him. Bhagavan, back to Arjuna now, the 16th different name of Krishna, Bhagavan. Bhag, as we know, means opulences, and van means possessor. It's a better name for God than God, because God means, to me, God means power. Of the six opulences, wealth, strength, fame, power, knowledge, beauty, and renunciation, God, I think, refers just to one of those, power, maybe wealth. But Bhagavan encompasses all the requisite opulences of the Lord, wealth, strength, power. Bhag means opulences, van means... So rather than saying God, which means someone who's powerful and wealthy, we say Bhagavan, who's not only powerful and wealthy, but famous and strong and beautiful and renounced as well. So it's a better nomenclature. And of course, from that you have Bhagavad Gita, the song of God, and then you have Srimad Bhagavatam, the beautiful story of the Absolute Truth. So this is the verse, first verse of the 10th chapter. Arjuna says, I totally accept as truth all you have told me. In other words, he doesn't pick and choose. This is not, Bhagavad Gita as it is, it's not a commentary where the author has his own agenda and picks what he likes and minimizes what he doesn't like. And it's done by so many people. Gandhi, he liked nonviolence. So he actually made his commentary, the Bhagavad Gita, a commentary on nonviolence. But, you know, that's not what the Bhagavad Gita is about. There was violence perpetrated. Soldiers died. Blood flowed. But Gandhi took some of the truths and made them as like nonviolence and ignored the fact that, in fact, a great literal world war was about to take place. So Arjuna is saying, I accept everything that you've told me. I haven't edited. I haven't added or subtracted. Prabhupada said that when people praised him for having done a wonderful thing in the Western countries, resuscitated, revitalized a lot of young people, give them new life. They said they, before they were gray-faced and desultory, and now they're chanting Hare Krishna, dancing like jubilant peacocks. So when he was praised for that, he said, my only credit is I have not added or subtracted anything. The message of Krishna has full potency, full revitalization potency, full rejuvenation potency. And if I have any credit, it's not, I didn't edit it. I didn't add anything or subtract it. I just delivered the Bhagavad Gita as it is. So Arjuna is accepting it in that way. I'm accepting as truth all that you've told me. Neither the demigods nor the demons, O Bhagavan, can understand your personality. The Prabhupada says here, as a son cannot understand his father's birth, Bhagavan obviously, the son wasn't present at the time the father was born. So we weren't present when Krishna came into being. In fact, there is no point in time at which Krishna came into being. He's eternal. So we can't understand how it is. Because in our world is a world of cause and effect. And every effect is a result of a previous cause. And that in itself is an effect of a previous cause. And thus it goes interminably. We're used to the world and the reasoning of cause and effect. So we don't have the equipment to understand the cause of all causes. So people say, well, if God caused everything, what caused God? But that's God. He did cause everything, and nothing caused him. That's why he's God, and that's why Bhagavad Gita is special, and that's why Arjuna accepts everything that Krishna said, literally. Bhagavan refers to the personal form of the Absolute, who possesses six opulences and full. Arjuna will ask Krishna to describe his opulence. So remember, this is the 10th chapter, and Krishna lists, you know, of fish, I am the shark, of mountains, I am the Himalayas, of sages, I am Narad, Bhrigupati. Then in the 11th chapter, Krishna reveals his universal form at Arjuna's request. And I think this chapter has quite a few names of Krishna. because Arjuna is like just rattling off these names. He's dazzled by the universal form. And the reason that he invokes the universal form is that he wants to establish Krishna as God by a graphic demonstration. Already in this 10th chapter for himself, Arjuna said, Param Brahma, Param Dharma, Povitam. As far as I'm concerned, you are the Supreme Spirit, you're the Supreme Abode, you're the purest. I accept it, and not only do I accept it, but great saints and sages, and not only you declare it. So that's already been settled, if it was ever an issue, for Arjuna in the previous chapter. But Arjuna wants Krishna to show this universal form to put to rest skeptics in future generations. And so we have this verse here in the 13th verse, 11th chapter. O Parameshwara, though I see you before me in your actual position, I wish to see how you've entered into this cosmic manifestation. I want to see that form of yours. So if Arjuna is a devotee and he's used to seeing the two-hand form of Krishna, and at Kurukshetra, I believe it was the forearmed, it was the actual forearmed form of Krishna, the Vishnu form of Krishna that was at Kurukshetra, because Krishna never leaves Goloka Eva Navasati Akilava. Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. So this is, in fact, a Vishnu form that's there with Arjuna on the chariot. And why would, if that's his relationship, why would Arjuna ask Krishna to show this fearsome universal form? And Baladev Vidyabhusan has explained some of it here. Ishvara Paramakrishna, it says, mostly, you know, we all like sweet things, but one time for Diwali, Diwali's coming up here. One time, we hadn't cooked for Diwali, this was about 15 years ago. And I said, Vaibhav, we got to cook, you know, we have hundreds of people here. Vaibhav, I said, everyone's going to bring something. I said, okay. And at that time, we didn't actually know that it's a tradition of Diwali to eat sweets. We didn't, I mean, we sort of knew it, but there were a lot of other things on our mind. We didn't kind of compute that. So that year, it was true, people brought stuff, and they brought a lot of stuff, and it was all sweets. And honestly, anyone would have killed for something salty, or sour, or bitter. You know, it was just sweets. I mean, we all like sweets, but, you know, eat three or four sweets, and then you want something salty, or you want something bitter. So here it's explained, you know, we're all, Arjuna was satisfied by the sweetness of friendship to Krishna, but a desire arose within him to taste the bitterness of Aishwarya, of seeing Krishna in an opulent form. So we have varieties of eatables. Some are sweet, some are bitter. And the universal form was bitter. But when Krishna revealed his universal form, it was so powerful and so overwhelming that Arjuna said, enough. I can't take it anymore. Please revert back to your four-handed form. So I think we'll stop now. It's time for yoga class. And we'll conclude. This was the third in a series of shows called The Names by Which Krishna is addressed or refers to himself in the Bhagavad Gita. And we've got, next week we'll start with Vishveshwara and Vishwarupa in the 11th chapter. And altogether there are 28 different names by which Krishna is known. So it's taken us 3 sessions to get to 18, so about 6 per session. And we'll resume and perhaps conclude next week, perhaps not.